The AC Podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada and is supported by the generous donations of our listeners. If you would like to partner with us in this ministry, please go to apologeticscanada.com.
Hey, welcome everyone to the AC Podcast. This is Steve Kim.
Andy Steiger.
Terry Crosby.
So, Terry, what you got for us today?
Well, he's not quite here yet, but just give me a sec. I think...
You've actually brought someone.
Yeah, we have a guest today.
Well, this should be interesting.
Yeah, just give me a sec.
He's opening the door.
Here we go.
What the?
What? How did you... All the way from England...
They see me rolling, they hate it.
Stephen Hawking.
Stephen Hawking with us. Whoa. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
It is a pleasure to be in your headquarters. I am looking forward to having deep intellectual conversations.
Wow, Stephen, thank you. I as well hope to have some deep intellectual conversations.
Yeah,
we are
so glad to have you here. We heard that you were a big fan of the AC Podcast. Is that true? That's just out there.
Absolutely. I like your thought-provoking topics and amazing sense of humor. It is the kind of atmosphere I live for. Terry Crosby has brought forth interesting articles that are on the fringes of the internet world.
Well, you know, how was your flight over? I mean, how long has Terry been keeping you in that closet over there?
It was too long. Like I was in a black hole.
Well, thanks for stopping by. We are honored that you're here.
No problem.
Let's get into some deep conversation.
Yeah, I would love to know, Stephen... Do you have a theory of why Terry is such a good-looking man?
That is because he does not suffer from a hair deficiency syndrome.
So I'm just curious. You see my head. I have no hair. Dr. Hawking, is there any hope for me?
According to my calculations, in another parallel universe, you will in fact possess long-flowing, thick, and luxuriant hair.
There is hope for me.
Dr. Hawking, I've had the opportunity of reading your book, A Brief History of Time. Fascinating book. I'm wondering, have you had the opportunity to read my book, Thinking, Answering Life's Five Biggest Questions?
You mean answering life's five most irrelevant questions?
Wow, that...
Burn!
that hurts. I like to think that those were fairly relevant.
Is it true you published your own book?
Well, technically, Apologetics Canada did.
So it's not by Oxford or anything, Stephen Hawking's.
Well, see, Oxford and Cambridge came to me, and I just couldn't choose between the two, so I just figured I'm just going to do it myself.
Your nose is growing. Was there anything that you wanted to discuss while you're here?
I had one question for Andy Steiger. Are the rumors true? Are you directing a new film called The Human Project? What is the premise?
You know, that's absolutely true. We have a new project coming out with Power to Change called The Human Project, in which we're going to be looking at four questions. And specifically, we're going to be looking at how people dehumanize by removing God from the source of four things that are discussed in Genesis 1 to 3, and how we humanize by putting God back as the source. And those four, just for our listeners, are the... God needs to be the source of the universe, life, relationship, and morality in order for us to be human. Hey, great to have you. I hope that your flight is well back to England and that you don't get bumped. That would not be good.
Thank you.
They see me rolling. They hate it.
I think, it's at this time that we should probably let our listeners know that we actually, in fact, do not have Stephen Hawking.
What?
We have something even better. Brett Smith, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
Welcome here, Brett.
It is a pleasure.
Yeah, wow. Brett, when did you realize you could do that voice?
That was probably at 2 a.m. in the morning. I think
when you learn that you can do most voices.
Yeah.
Awake, staring at the ceiling, going.
Exactly.
That was pretty shocking to me. I mean, I heard
Steve,
this.
You've never heard this before.
No, I heard this for the first time today, and I've heard Stephen Hawking before, and I've heard the synthesized voice and everything, but I was not expecting that. This was like pitch perfect.
Yeah, so if in case anybody's wondering how this was done, Brett did this with his voice. There was no computer stuff involved here at all. What have you done with this voice? Like, have you ever entered a competition or anything?
Yeah, a couple of weeks back, I went into this talent show at Columbia Bible College here in Abbotsford. And basically what I did is I took a video. It was one of those videos that zooms out from the Earth and shows how big our universe is. It was about 2 minutes long, and they started playing it in front of everyone. And a couple acts before, I managed to make my way into the closet. I had a wireless mic, and I basically narrated the entire video. And when there's around 30 seconds left, I came out and pretty much fooled everyone who didn't know I could do the voice.
Wow.
That is fantastic. So good to have you on the podcast. I've been for wanting sure. to have you for some time now to do this.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was too much fun.
Why don't we transition into the next segment by asking you one last question before you leave, Dr. Hawking. Have you seen this new show on Netflix called 13 Reasons Why?
It is funny you ask. I just read an article last night. The article touched on interesting issues on psychoanalysis and also how we can better accompany people who struggle with depression and suicide.
All right. What a great segue into the topic that we want to discuss, which is actually a very serious topic, the topic of suicide.
It's all the rage right now, that show 13 Reasons Why. There are lots of different podcasts and articles that are covering this. And I actually hadn't really heard anything about this show until I think you mentioned it, Andy, a little while ago.
I saw it when it came out on Netflix, and you know, I didn't really think anything of it. I didn't really know the premise until I read about it in a magazine.
Mm-hmm. Every time I open Netflix, it's right there. Like,
well, it's ready super to view. Popular yeah. right now, the and most there's popular. A lot of people talking about it.
Yeah.
For those of you that are unaware of this new show, it's a show about 13 reasons why this girl kills herself. Now, I'm not giving away anything. They tell you this right at the very beginning. But the controversy in the show revolves around the idea of suicide and this girl that really – her name, by the way, is Hannah in the show. And the show revolves around her suicide revenge fantasy, if you will. And I think that that's an apt description of what is taking place in the show.
So basically what happens, and this is something that you find out right in the first episode, so we're not giving away any particular spoilers here, but basically what happens is Hannah commits suicide, and the show begins after she has committed suicide, and her friend Clay gets this parcel delivered to his doorstep. And this was sent by Hannah, and in the package are a number of cassette tapes. This is basically her audio diary talking about the 13 reasons why she decided to take her own life. And now, each side of the tape, the reason actually has to do with a person always. Like, this is how you contributed to my death. This is how so-and-so contributed to my decision to take my life, and so on and so forth. And now she arranged things such that everybody that's involved in this gets to listen to it and basically hear from Hannah from beyond the grave how he or she contributed to her suicide.
But if you read any of the articles with regards to the producers and directors of this, they say that's not what their intent was, the revenge
fantasy. Oh, really?
Fantasy.
What would they say their intent was?
I mean, they wanted to bring spotlight to the issue.
Of suicide?
Of suicide and just mental health issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, they really felt that they were doing something good in developing this show.
And I would argue that they are. I mean, I would say that there's good things about the show and there's bad things about the show, which I want to discuss.
Yeah.
Credit where credit is due, right? I think if nothing else, this show really got people talking.
It did. Now, here's what's interesting about this. I mean, you guys are probably aware of this, but since 1999, suicide has gone up 24%. It is truly an epidemic. Now, what's interesting, though, about the show is that the age range in which it's gone up the most is between 35 and 64-year-olds. Mm-hmm. In fact, if we were to break this down, men in their 50s has gone up 50% suicide. Mm-hmm. And women, 60 to 64, it's rose 60%. So it's kind of interesting. If anything, this show, you know, shouldn't be about teenagers. It should be about middle-aged adults if we want to talk just about suicide. However, I think it is important to know that suicide has increased amongst girls aged 10 to 14. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, this show is spot on that suicide has gone up in that demographic. I think, though, that there's also another important key to this show that really needs to be discussed more about, and that is just the sheer objectification of our girls, that we live in a rape culture currently. For example, each year they publish the stats on girls that are being raped in college, and those stats are around 1 out of 5. Now, I see that number fluctuate between 1 in 3 and 1 in 5. That's staggering, isn't it?
The most prominent part of this show is suicide, but there's a lot of stuff that goes with it, right?
Well, depression. That's the 13 reasons, isn't
right.
it?
There's depression, there's bullying, there's rape, there's all kinds of things that go into it. I didn't watch the whole thing, but I watched the first episode, and then I read some like synopses and all that kind of stuff. But as I was reading through it, what kept coming to my mind was that story of Amanda Todd, that girl from Maple Ridge who committed suicide a few years ago, right? Because she did something unwise on Snapchat or something like that, and a picture of her nude started circulating, and that led her to all kinds of problems for her. She moved schools multiple times, didn't help, all kinds of bullying happening, and then eventually she decided to take her own life. And it was, for me, it was like a little too close to home. Especially because I have a daughter, and I'm thinking, okay, what kind of an environment will I be releasing her to as she heads off to school?
Do you find it interesting that in the show, going along with what you just talked about, Steve, that in the show they specifically have tapes, that Hannah's created these tapes, and Tony at the very beginning of the show, and again, not giving away anything here, Tony at the very beginning says, he makes this comment that things in the past were better. Mm-hmm. And so you see Tony dressing in the 50s, you know, and driving an old Mustang and adopting kind of older stuff. And I think that there's a point that they're trying to make there, isn't there, with the challenge that technology has brought to our young people?
Yeah, I think so.
As Snapchat, like you just mentioned.
Right. Now our kids are exposed to things that we never really had to worry about. And sure, I mean, when we talked about pornography and things like that, right, we had to deal with certain things like other kids bringing magazine to your school and things like that. And parents had little to no control really over what it is that you're going to see among your peers. That now is on steroids, right?
Yeah.
Everything is at your fingertips.
If somebody took an inappropriate picture of you in the past, they had to do quite a bit to get that circulating. They had to take their film to a film development store. You remember those days. You know, you submit it like a week or two later. Yeah, Terry's like, I go back even farther than that. Terry's got his own black room. So, you know, in a couple weeks later, you get it back. Do you remember you'd go and be like, hey, you know, you got that package for Andy Steiger? And they look through, oh man, your film hasn't come back yet. You know, you get your film. I mean, the amount of work that would be required for your entire school to see an inappropriate picture of you would be quite a feat. But these days, literally seconds, an inappropriate picture could be taken and could be circulated amongst your entire school.
And also, as I was watching this show, one of the concerns that I had, like a more kind of broader concerns, was that it, and this is the kind of criticism that this TV series has been getting a lot, is that it trivializes suicide. It almost glorifies it because you look at it and you go, okay, you know, there is certain love to be had, right? After the fact that you're gone from this world, right? All of her thoughts are now being sort of revealed to the people that actually matter, and you know, her voice is getting heard and all of that kind of stuff. Great. Now, the problem is, given the worldview of the show, if you will, Hannah's gone. There's nothing glorious, there's nothing cool about suicide. You are dead. You are gone. And as you watch the TV show, you notice that everything that's happening, Hannah is the one person who's not experiencing any of this. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just concerned, especially as a father, that our young people might watch this show and think, oh, see how cool it is, especially as an adolescent.
She's getting her revenge.
Right. Especially as an adolescent, you're trying to find your identity, right? And how do you do that? You find your identity in social context, right? That's why popularity is so important in high school. And so I am just concerned that some youth might watch that and go, that is so cool. I'm like, no, actually, it is not cool. Once you kill yourself, you are not there to experience it, especially if you hold to a secularist worldview. You should be very concerned, very afraid.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment about the show as well. I mean, if you went to the Wikipedia article that you sent us, at the bottom there's like critical responses. Mm-hmm. Like 3/4 of them are very positive in the sense that they're going, wow, that was creative. Wow, that was amazing acting. Wow, you know, it goes on and on. Then you get down to the bottom and there's a couple places where this is not realistic. You know, this is not portraying the way it should be. So the article that you sent us, Brooke Fox, 13 Reasons Why,
it's an excellent article,
and it's
by the way.
Unintended Consequences by Brooke Fox,
who's a psychiatrist.
She was a psychiatrist, and you know, she's concerned about this because she has a 12-year-old and a 16-year-old daughter, and she really wanted to watch the show with them, right? Because to her, it wasn't bringing the right focus.
This wasn't something you consume, she was arguing. This is something that you need to discuss if you're going to let your child watch it. Because I think a lot of people forget that teenagers need help processing information, particularly with regards to a show like this, in which I think there's a lot of mixed messages that are being sent, one of which I think, as you were talking about, Steve, glorifies suicide in that here's Hannah's way of getting her revenge. What's not being highlighted is that Hannah has a mental illness and that Hannah needs help. And that there are other ways of dealing with bullying and the challenges that are found in this digital age than taking your life.
I mean, I watched the first episode. It kind of made me feel a little funny in the sense that when she starts talking, it has this revenge fantasy tone to it, right?
Oh, yeah.
And she is kind of blaming. She's going to make it known who contributed to her death. I mean,
it seems like she blames everyone except for herself.
Right.
Well, because one of the things that comes out is that every time Hannah talks in the show, every time she's giving her analysis of what took place, it's never brought into question. You know, because I mean, that's what you would do with a friend that's contemplating suicide. You would question, you know, how did that happen? You know, maybe did you read that right or anything else? No, the show's given to you in such a way that everything she says is absolutely the way that it took place.
Yeah.
Maybe like, for example, the way she lost a friend or something like that. And so in that sense, if that's the case, everything that she's experienced is absolutely correct and she's completely healthy, then does that mean that her conclusion of suicide was the right conclusion?
One of the things that we have to keep in mind is that just in terms of literary devices and things like that, when something is portrayed in the first-person perspective, right? So you get a lot of that in this show. You get a lot of Hannah's perspective and Clay's perspective, Clay being the main character that listens to the tape. What happens is when you hear something from a first-person perspective, literarily speaking, it has automatic credibility. So we really have to watch out when you listen to something in a first-person perspective in a movie or a TV show. You actually have to think about it even more critically because you are so much more prone to just kind of accepting it as is.
Now, that means, though, as the consumer, as the person watching it, you need to be engaged in what you're watching. Because to give credit to the show, they had to make it somehow. And in making the show, some things are going to work in their favor and some things aren't. Just on sheer – how do you tell this story? Now, we might disagree with how they've told the story. I think we would all agree that we're glad that they're bringing suicide to the table, that people are at least discussing it like we are now. I think we would have issues, though, with some of the ways, though, that it has been some of the ways that it was portrayed. But at the same time, don't you agree, though, that whenever you tell a story, I mean, you are limited to how you can tell a story?
They didn't follow the book. The author of this article is basically, why did you go from this ending to another ending kind of thing, right?
Or different aspects in the show, different things that happened in the 13 reasons, they actually made them more uncomfortable in the show than they were in the book, which does raise a question, you know, why? The other thing, too, that I think is a critique that's fair of the show is people have said that they don't give a lot of alternatives. You know, they don't discuss alternatives or ways that Hannah could have gotten help.
Right. The moral of the story is basically be kind to one another, right? Because that might save a life.
Right.
In one of the articles that I sent to you guys, it was pointed out that You know, that's actually taking depression in a narrow kind of a sense, right? Yeah, be kind to
one another. Are you saying in the sense that it's not looking at the mental health issue that's going on here?
It's a lot more complex than just emotional feeling of loneliness, right? Just feeling sad. There's more than that. There could be family history. There could be all kinds of physiological, genetic reasons. So such that even if you were to be as kind to this person as you could possibly be, it could still lead to something horrible.
What about you guys? Have either of you dealt with depression?
Yeah, there's a number of people that I know that have dealt with depression. And
not yourself specifically,
not myself,
but your family.
Yeah, some people that have been in our home as well. Mm-hmm. So we've been exposed to that. I mean, the rate of depression, mental health issues, like you're saying, Andy, has skyrocketed. Yeah, I think we need to be knowledgeable about this. And I think this show really limits mm-hmm. your understanding about the mental health aspect.
It's not something that you can simply fix by it certainly helps to be, you know, in a loving environment, but that's not the whole of the story. And it felt as though reading the synopses.
Well, Steve, can you go in a little more on that? Like, how about yourself and how you've struggled with depression?
Yeah, it turns out there is some history of this in my family. I didn't really know it at the time, but I'm predisposed to depression. And I struggled with it a lot in my early 20s, so much so, you know, I was hospitalized a couple of times. I was suicidal, but I wasn't.
What do you mean by that?
I never really actually wanted to kill myself, but what I really wanted was somebody to pay attention to me, right? So I actually have cut myself before. And I still have a small couple of, it's really hard to see, but I have a couple of small scars. And I know that I didn't really want to kill myself because I knew how to cut myself if I really wanted to kill myself, but I didn't do that. I did it in mm-hmm. all the, but it was, I did it for maximum effect so people could see, right? So I didn't actually want to kill myself. Not to say that, you know, anybody who attempts suicide, you know, that's all there is to it. You know, like some people actually do want to kill themselves because they find this world unbearable.
Yeah.
And they don't know how to deal with the depression and things like that.
Do you find, guys, that there is a stigma on mental health?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. There is a huge thing. I mean, even the idea of going to see a psychiatrist, I think it's gotten a lot better today. But even back then, you know, there was this sense of, oh, he's crazy.
Right.
Right. And my background, I'm Korean, right? In Korea, even today, I mean, it was featured in the news not too long ago, like maybe a week or two ago. And they were basically, in the news, they were calling for a change in attitude about mental health issues because so many people are suffering from mental health issues in Korea, but less than 20% of people who suffer from some kind of mental health issue are actually seeking help because of the stigma that if you go see a psychiatrist, psychologist, then you're crazy.
You know, there's a new show out right now. Well, show. It's on CNN. You can see it's called Mostly Human. It's a great show. In fact, we'll post it on our show notes. But there's an episode 4. They do some interviews in Silicon Valley and talking about the secret there. And that secret is the number of CEOs and other people in the tech industry that are committing suicide is staggering. And one of the things that the show brings out is just the fact that there is such a heavy stigma on mental health issues that people aren't able to talk about it. They're not able to get help. And they bottle it up inside until they take their lives.
That was one of the criticisms of the author of that article, the last article, is that in the show, it doesn't let people know that there is help mm-hmm. for people that have mental health issues, right? Or depression. Mm. Like that was a big part where she was just like, well, they didn't touch any of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry, I was really encouraged by just about a month ago or maybe two, Bell had a campaign going on called Let's Talk. And there was an Olympian, Clara Hughes. That was really neat. There's a lot of people that kind of jumped on board that.
And by let talk, they mean let's talk about mental health.
So I believe Clara Hughes has, you know, depression, has been suffering from that. I could be wrong on that. We might need to check that out. But Howie Mandel came on board as well to talk about this issue. And for a full day, it was really neat to see the tweets and the Facebook stuff that went out. Mm-hmm. All day long. It was well received and well talked about that day.
I am appreciative of all these initiatives that are happening. I guess I just really want to see this go beyond just raising awareness to actually hashing out and understanding how this works, that it's not just, you know, you being emotionally weak. There is some kind of like a physiological or genetic reasons for it, right? So it's actually really, in a sense, it's no different than you having a broken arm, right?
This is where things are going to get challenging, though, isn't it, Steve? Because now we live in a culture that is embracing quite quickly ideas such as euthanasia, a word that means a good death. And basically, a lot of the logic that we hear behind that is, listen, there's people in pain that don't want to live any longer, so they should be able to take their lives. And now you just equated it, Steve, to a broken arm, right? And that we can – something that we can fix. Well, it's this idea, isn't it, though, that a broken arm has pain, you know, and we can fix that and we can ease your pain. But what do you do with somebody who's got mental pain, you know, and these suicidal thoughts and this depression that is a pain to them? Does that mean that they can end their lives, right? See, this to me is where things are getting so blurred, is that we're not even allowing for a subject matter of mental illness.
Right.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In the same way you would as a broken arm.
Right. And that's the problem, right? When we talk about mental health issues, it's not broad enough, I think. You know, we make one of two mistakes largely, I think. Either you think of it as a completely emotional thing, or we think of it as a completely physical thing. One of the reasons why mental health with respect to euthanasia is so tricky is that a mental health issue, even if it has kind of a physiological roots to it, the manifestation of it is mental, in the sense that it has to do with decision making, it has to do with all of these things that then inform your choice to either take your own life or whatever.
I want to take it a step further. I'm not sure the church understands this issue as well as it should. About a year and a half ago, Rick Warren, you know who he is?
Yeah, his son took his life.
His son committed suicide, and he had been dealing with this since birth, they said. And, you know, he went away that day as happy as can be, and the next thing they know that he killed himself. But they had just, in the last year, they had a symposium there with a number of excellent speakers to address the issue in the church of mental health. And I'm not sure we're there as a church yet. I know it's a difficult issue, but where do we go as a church? That's
well, if anything, I hope that the church could lead the way in a society that is astray on this issue. I mean, in the show from Mostly Human, one of the things that was talked about there is that one of the reasons nobody wants to talk about this in the tech industry, for example, is because as somebody that's doing a job, you need your mind. And the last thing that you want to do is show any sort of weakness. And so ultimately, these people, the one man in particular who ended up taking his life, was advised by his psychiatrist to keep it a secret. You know, you better not say anything, or else you're going to lose your job. You know, people are going to look at you differently. And I think that's a question, isn't it? Ultimately, this is going to come down to, where is your value found? And this is where I think the church has a great opportunity to speak life into a culture that's losing sight of human value.
I don't know, that sounds like a pretty good landing point for me, at least for now. Obviously, this is a huge issue. We could spend days talking about all of this, but hopefully this is another kind of platform to start your conversation. So starting this week, we're going to start a new short segment in our show where we answer some of your questions. We get emails every week with questions sent in by our listeners, but
we've been getting them for a while and we've been choosing to ignore them.
Yeah, mainly because we just don't have the time.
And yeah.
And so we haven't really been answering them. So
we feel convicted.
Yeah.
And we want to encourage you listeners to ask us questions. And we thought, you know what, instead of responding via email or anything else like that, we're just going to do a small portion of our show called Q&A.
Take a few minutes and just answer one or maybe two of the questions that came in.
We're not promising to give you some great polished response. This is going to be us shooting from the hip how we would address your question as though we were sitting for coffee one day.
Right. So, you know, don't expect any really deep research material here, but we're just going to give you whatever it is that we...
What I'm thinking.
So this week's question has to do with one of our older podcast episodes, actually, in Get Real About Porn.
I mentioned about my accountability partner being my mom.
Right. And you said something about how you wouldn't have an opposite gender person to be your accountability partner
anymore. Yeah, I think I remember saying that if I could do it over again, I wouldn't use my mom as my accountability partner. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean, if for those of you who just need a little more context to this, we're talking about having a software on your computer that keeps you accountable, to which I have and have had for very long time. And back in the old days, I used XXX Church. These days, I use
Covenant Eyes.
Yeah, Covenant Eyes. Yeah. In fact, we use that for our whole family, every device that we own, mm-hmm. As a family. And I do this because, as I mentioned on the show, men need accountability, period. Doesn't matter who you are. Mm-hmm. You need accountability, and you need people that can keep you accountable. So that's why I changed who I would use as an accountability partner, because it really raises the question, you know, can your mom or your spouse actually hold you accountable? And I would argue that they're probably not the best option. And the reason is, if you're struggling with something, or maybe you're hiding something, you need a friend. You need somebody that can look at you and say, Steve, you know, how are you doing? Are you lying to me, Steve? Mm-hmm. You know, like, or they know your past as well and go, Steve, like, are you looking at things online that you shouldn't be? And they're looking at your profile and they can call you out on that kind of stuff. I don't think that that's something that you want your spouse or mom doing. I think when it's a spouse or a mom, it's immediately putting you in a vulnerable situation in which you are apt not to be truthful. It's already putting you in a place where you're not going to be as honest or truthful. You're going to sugarcoat that. Whereas with a person of the same sex, and particularly a friend in whom you trust, you'll be honest. And accountability requires honesty. I'm not saying you won't be honest with your spouse. But the truth is, I think that you don't want to be completely open with your spouse either. Mm-hmm. And you might be like, well, what do you mean by that? Well, if I'm walking down the street and I have a lustful thought, or I look at a woman in a way I shouldn't, you know, I'm not going to turn my wife and be like, hey, Nancy, do you know what thought I just had? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't I do that? Well, because that's going to be hurtful to my wife.
I think that's the key thing. Like, I used to have my wife as the accountability partner for a time, and I don't do that anymore. And the reason is, well, let's say, you know, I do something stupid and I see something online that I shouldn't. She gets a report of that, and if she finds out what it is, it's not just, you know, because sometimes men tend to think, why does this affect women so much? Why does this affect our wives so much? Because this is just my sin, and this is something stupid that I'm doing. Well, the reality is, no matter how you would like to see this pan out, your spouse, your wife, will feel betrayed by you, right? Mm-hmm. As you're looking at this,
or girlfriend, really, or boyfriend,
yeah,
for that matter,
it really hurts. And I think there is some wisdom in having a friend, somebody who is of the same gender as you, to be able to hold accountable. Sometimes I think it might even be better if there's a little bit of distance between you and that friend, so that your friendship, in a sense, doesn't really muddle this. You know, the
misguided.
It needs
to be a friend you can be honest to.
Exactly. You got to be able to be honest with this person, but not so close, such that, you know, there might be some misguided compassion that muddles this whole thing, right? It's got to be a friend who can tell you, almost like a business relationship in this sense, mm-hmm. right? Is it, this is what we agree to, and this person is going to hold me accountable.
And has the guts to hold him accountable. I had a young adult contact me the other day, wanted to meet, because his accountability partner just wouldn't ask him the tough questions. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, truthfully, your mom's not going to ask you the tough questions. Mm-hmm. She doesn't necessarily want to know the answer to those questions. Whereas if you have a trusted friend, they are going to ask you, they do want to know, and they are going to hold you accountable. Yeah.
I think we all just need to realize that we struggle in a lot of different areas, mm-hmm. and sexual purity as well. I mean, for me, I really believe we need somebody that's going to push us on to purity. Not so much in the sense that, oh, you had that bad thought again. Oh, shame on you, mm-hmm. right? They're saying, let's be more like Christ. Mm-hmm. Like, how can we do that? How can you be more right. like Christ in your daily walk? So, I mean, yeah, it's important for us to go back and forth, you know, how you doing? But what is the most important thing? We want to become more like Christ. So how do we do that?
Yeah, because purity isn't just about the lack of sin, if you will, right? Purity is more about more than that. But anyway, those are some of our thoughts. I hope that was helpful to you. Thank you, listeners, for joining us this week. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll come back next week with more stuff to think about.